You're listening to The Deal Podcast. I'm Danny Brown, your host. We are now broadcasted in over 150 nations and have ranked pretty high on Apple Podcasts. That said, we'd love if you haven't already to subscribe at Apple Podcasts to The Deal with Danny Brown and leave us a comment. It helps so much with Apple ratings and potential sponsorships and all that. And tell some real estate people. We have a huge, huge real estate following. Every week we break down the habits, the mindset, the experiences, the insight and wisdom of the best real estate performers in the world. Getting to the best performers this year out of Boston, go Sox, a real boss babe. Alex Biega from the Biega Gilmore team, one of the top teams in the Boston, New England area. They're in the core Boston central area, right in the core of the city, doing a ton of brownstones and high-end properties, and she is killing it on every level. A true, true grinder and hustler. Came up, grew up in Boston, got recruited to play soccer at Harvard. She is brilliant, smart, attractive, professional, classy. She's got it all. She's got it all. You can find her at Alexandra Biega on Instagram, or like I said, her website. And school is in session. If you're in real estate, you're balancing being a mom, being a dad, being an agent, check this out. She did 80 lease deals her first year or two. Grinded it out because she was young and didn't have a network of people buying. So an incredible, incredible story here. Listen to it closely. Enjoy it. And I hope to see you all soon. Alex, good to see you. Welcome to The Deal. It's been a while.
Good to see you. Thanks for having me.
I guess it hasn't really been a while. We connected in San Diego a month ago, so it hasn't been that long. So here you are, a big broker in Boston, but you're in sunny Florida. What's going on? You on break?
I am technically on vacation, if that actually exists in real estate, but I am down here.
It exists. It exists. Doesn't it exist?
A little bit. A little bit. I feel like I'm never really... shut off.
Totally.
But I actually grew up in Florida. And then I moved to Boston my freshman year of high school. And so we come down here often, or I should say mostly in the winter, for a period of time, usually around the holidays. And, we have family down here and things like that. So I'm down here for the time being until Christmas.
Awesome.
I'm excited.
Awesome.
It's nice and warm.
Oh, you're getting warm. Well, I'm in LA, obviously, so we're, a cold 67, 68 degrees today, but I'm not going to complain. All right, so talk to me. You're a Boston expert. What's going on in Boston? It's December. People are starting to break away for the holiday or mid-December. But tell me, what's been going on in Boston compared to everywhere else? Are you experiencing the same slowdowns and challenges? Give me a sort of a quick breakdown of, the Boston markets and where you work and what's going on now versus maybe what was going on a year or two or three ago when things were smoking.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am in downtown Boston. So my team or my partner and I and my team, we only sell in pretty much a radius of a mile. And so we're downtown Back Bay, South End, Beacon Hill. So really a small radius, which
go Sox. I had to just
go
say
Sox.
That. I had to say that.
love the Sox. And so we, the spring and the beginning of 2023 was actually quite busy for us.
Okay.
And kind of like, and most of the places around the country, there was a bit of a slowdown in the summer and the fall. We're used to seeing that seasonal slowdown, but I think it was to a little bit of a greater degree this year. Obviously, we know the rate environment and everything like that is playing into that. But the way I would describe the market is slow and steady. I think in Boston, we have so many people moving into Boston, whether it's for a job, for school, for grad school. We have so many universities around. So we are seeing still some velocity of people kind of relocating to Boston. Then also the people that we have moving in and out of the city to the suburbs with growing families or empty nesters and things like that. And so, I'd consider it slow and steady. We are putting deals together, but it's definitely taking a little bit more creativity and, dedication to each listing, which we don't mind, but we're
So give me a breakdown of, you're in the city core, right? Boston is a super urban, high-end, high-rise type of market, brownstones as well, similar to New York. But give me a little more context, because I'm not super familiar with the real estate there. I'm sure a lot of our audience isn't. When you say Boston core city, but then suburbs, I really wouldn't even know. What are the suburbs and what are they called? And compare sort of the type of product and price point that you may find if you're a family buying a house in the suburb versus, hey, maybe you're a family or a couple buying in the city. Just kind of an overview of the differences and what the what the prices are like, et cetera.
Yeah, so again, we're in core downtown Boston, and then there's a number of suburbs that are, you know, a short distance away from the city, whether it's a 10-minute drive, 20-minute drive, half-hour drive. And some of those, there's Metro West, which is like the Wellesley Weston area. And then there's the South Shore, which is Hingham, Scituate, Duxbury, Cohasset. And then the North Shore, which is Marblehead, Swampscott, places like that. And I'd say those are kind of the core suburbs where we see people moving in and out of Boston. There's a lot of movement for people in the city who have their second or third kid. They're starting to think about schools and things like that. They end up moving out of the city into those suburban towns. And then we have a lot of the empty nesters who, you know, have been in the suburbs for a long time, but they're moving back to the city now that all their kids are out of the house. And so in comparing those two markets, I mean, all the markets are so different, even the South Shore to the Metro West to the North Shore, all very different markets, all varying levels of inventory and price points. But downtown Boston, I can really speak to the price points. We really have anything from a studio that's $500,000 to, you know, luxury brownstone single families that can go, you know, 25 million, 30 million plus. And then we also have that high rise inventory. My team really focuses on brownstones. So we do most of our business, I'd say 90% is actually brownstone condos in these neighborhoods that we service. So we've kind of carved out a little niche where we sell full brownstone buildings to developers who then gut the buildings, demo them, and then create different types of condos. So we have some developers that do triplexes, duplexes, and then some that build out single family homes. But the difference is in the suburbs, you're really getting a single family home with a yard and a garage. And in the city, you're really, you know, committing to condo living for the most part, unless you're buying a full brownstone.
Okay. Well, that's a good overview. And I know there's so many micro markets and suburbs. So let's just separate the suburbs out for now. So these brownstone buildings that they're converting, are they residential buildings or were they like factories or, and they changed the zoning and the use to residential? When you say you sell these buildings to your builders, what are those buildings when you sell them? What were their uses?
So typically they're longtime owners of these properties that have been held as apartment buildings. So there might be, you know, 12 units in a building and it's, you know, become run down over the years. And so a developer will come in, purchase the building as is, and then, you know, tear it down or not tear it down, gut the inside of it, only leaving the brick on the inside. And then they'll create like two luxury units. So you'll buy the brownstone for, you know, varying prices, 3 to 5 million probably, unless it's a larger one, and then sell out the units. They can range anywhere from 4 to 5 million to 8 to 9 million.
So there's a huge price range, you know, but in the millions, in the high end. So if it's bread, what is the bread and butter price point? Not the ultra high end. Well, that sounds like it's 20, 30, 40 million and not the single, but like your average 2-3 bedroom brownstone that maybe a couple with one kid or two kids would say, yeah, what's the bread and butter? Is that more like a 3 to 5 or 3 to 10? Like what?
I think it's probably in the 2.5 to 3.5 range.
Okay, so you can get something for 2.5 to 3.5.
Yeah, you can get a 2-bed, 2-bath with a parking spot in that 2.5 to 3.5 range.
Okay, good to know.
Again, not huge spaces, but you know, in a great location, maybe outdoor space like a roof deck. So you can get something in that range. Obviously, when the higher you get, the more space you get.
Of course. More amenities, more high end. And now hearing that, I would assume if you go to the suburbs and you're driving 20 minutes, 30 minutes out for that $2-4 million range, you're going to get a good size 4 or 5 bedroom house? Or what are you going to get in the suburbs? Obviously the suburbs have variety of prices, but a bread and butter typical young family, it's like, all right, I'm going to go to the suburbs and I have, you know, $3 million to spend. What are they looking at? What are their best options?
Yeah, so it's different in every suburb. And I will say that I'm hyper-focused downtown. So I don't even know that market. But yeah. Interestingly enough, we have so many clients that are going out there that we formed this thing called Team New England. I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's basically, we sort of formed a little partnership with the other two top teams, the top teams in each market. So we have been the number one team in Boston at Compass for the last 2 years and hopefully a third coming up here. And then we partnered with the number one team out in Metro West and then the number one team down in the South Shore. Awesome. And so we know that when we send a client to one of the suburbs, they are in the best hands and they're getting the real specialists. We don't, you know, pretend to know that market and, you know, just sell around, but
sign of a true professional and a true consultant right there. Cause a lot of agents, and especially, I won't say newer, but some are not newer agents, but will try to take any deal anywhere and they're not adding any value. They don't have the knowledge, the nuances, where we know as experts in being number one in Boston, you know how important that is to know the 100%. Nuances. And that's the difference. You know, otherwise, just go use any random person with a license because they're going to give you no information and no real value. Right. So that's a true sign that I see a thread through a lot of the people that I discuss with an interview. All right. So let's get back to the beginning. You gave me a ton of information on Boston. So thank you for the lesson on real estate in Boston. So talk to me a little bit about, you know, you said you were born in Florida and then moved young to Boston. Talk me through how you grew up, where you grew up, what your parents did, where you went to school, and then how the heck did you end up landing in this industry of real estate?
Yeah, so I was actually born in Mississippi, which is kind of a fun fact. I only spent less than a year there, but my dad was a doctor in the Air Force there.
Oh, nice, okay.
That's where I was born, and then moved to Florida.
Thank you for his service.
Yes, thank him. And so then we moved to Florida, and I spent my childhood there. We would summer in Boston because both my parents are originally from Boston. So we're up there. So then we ended up moving my freshman year of high school. So I went to Nobles, which is in a suburb of Boston, Dedham. And then for college, I went to Harvard and then stuck around Boston and probably will never leave. Met my husband at Harvard. He played hockey there. I played soccer there. We loved
athletes.
It. We spent a lot of time over there in Cambridge. And then once we graduated, he actually went to play pro hockey down in North Carolina.
Wow.
We did lessons for 3 years and I stayed in Boston. My first job, when I was in college, I spent my time in the summers doing different things because during the school year, soccer took up a lot of time, so I couldn't travel or really do anything like that. So first summer I went to London School of Economics, second summer I went to Barcelona, and then the third summer I did an internship at a local Boston financial firm, Brown Brothers Harriman, which was a great experience. I loved all the people I met there. And when I left at the end of the summer, they offered me a job doing basically what I was doing as an intern, but a full-time position. And at that point, I really didn't know what I wanted to do. I just knew that I did the internship. I liked the people I met there. And so I took the job because I was like, oh, this is cool. Senior year, I'll have a job under my belt.
You're ready to go. Yeah.
Fun.
Working.
Yeah. And so at the end of the year, whenever I started at Brown Brothers, it was great. Again, great experience. But I just didn't see a career path for me there in terms of what I wanted to do. So I pivoted and I actually got my real estate license with I have four younger brothers. So one of my brothers and my husband, and, they kind of just did it for fun with me. And then I gave it a shot and 9 years later, here I am.
Did you give it a shot? Yeah.
I kind of dove right in, and really loved it from the beginning. And so 9 years later, I have a business partner and then we have, a team of, there's six of us. So, and we've
team of six. Talk me through your team really quick, and then we got to rewind. We just skipped right over some stuff, like the fact that you never got a B in your life, and you know, you're much smarter than the host of this show, and some other things. But what is your team set up? You have a partner,
My partner Rob Kilgore and I, we partnered 6 years ago now. He had been in the business at that point for 15 years, and I was like 4 years in. And so there's the two of us, and then we have two full-time assistants. One is sort of marketing focused and one is transaction coordinator. And then we have two junior agents that are kind of building up their book of business.
Okay. And what was the impetus for the partnership? I mean, that's a really interesting partnership. Someone who's newer in the business, someone who's been a veteran, were there strengths, weaknesses, things, like what were the core elements that brought you guys together?
Yeah, absolutely. So we were at the same company. We were both at Coble Banker. When I first got into the business, I was someone's basically just assistant. I just did whatever they told me to do. I would drive to smoke inspections, wherever. And he had a different model. The guy I started with, he was kind of all over the place, like very Zillow based. And so
okay, Zillow leads.
I was, which is completely opposite from like our model now, which is why. So I started under someone and learned really quickly. I mean, he kind of just threw me right in. And so I was supporting him for about a year and then started to actually get some business on my own. So I went off on my own. You know, predominantly at the beginning, I was doing a lot of rental business. I mean, I think one summer I did like 80 rentals. So it was like just really,
80?
Really, really hustling.
Yeah. 80 human beings you made a deal with. Yeah. That's a lot of personalities.
And rentals too. Like, chill. So anyway, started to get busy on my own and went off on my own. And then I kind of realized, you know, throughout my whole life, I'd always been on a team. You know, I was always on a soccer team.
Dang,
I had
an athlete.
Huge family, four younger brothers. Like I was always just surrounded by other people and, you know, motivated and whatever. And so Rob sat nearby and I was always bouncing ideas off of him. And he was obviously a veteran. And so if I had questions, I'd, you know, turn to him. And then we ended up doing a deal together. And it kind of just organically turned into, oh, that deal was smooth. I brought the buyer. It was his listing. Then we sort of talked about, you know, what my career was going to look like in real estate. And he had a lot of thoughts and advice. And then we kind of went down the, okay, well, what would this look like if we created a team? And so we both figured out that that's what we wanted. We wanted to create a team. And we have very different strengths and weaknesses, which I think works really well. He's sort of old school, you know, calling people, and I'm like social media, tech savvy, millennial. So it actually works really well, in kind of creating this team that we have.
Yeah, I hear that a lot. The best partnerships are you're bringing different skills, different viewpoints, and it sounds like you guys have done that. And when you can do that well, that's where partnerships really flourish. So, God, there's so much to unpack here. I mean, 80 rental deals. Do people understand how many human beings you have to talk to and deal with and properties you need to see and the pages of paperwork times 80? Are you kidding me? But that's how you build a real business. And most agents don't have the hustle and the tenacity and the work ethic to do 10 of those, let alone 80. So that's, you know, pretty much speaks volume. So let me get back to some of the things you said. First of all, you went to Harvard, a boss, and then you also were the oldest sister with all brothers?
Four younger brothers, yeah.
Were there older sisters or brothers?
No.
Or you were the oldest. So you're the oldest sibling with four youngest brothers. So that alone, you survived that. I can't imagine what football games on Thanksgiving looked like in your family.
Everything. Football
yeah,
games.
So you know how to handle the roughnecks and the boys, and you know that's also a great learning ground for, you know, being in big time business when we're dealing with a lot, I mean, men and women, but egos and craziness, aggressiveness. So soccer, obviously you had to be an elite athlete and an elite student. So you get into Harvard. Was that like your dream school? Cause you're from Boston and you were just, that was where you needed to go. And cause if you got into Harvard, you pretty much can go anywhere you want.
So I was It was actually my sophomore year of high school because I was recruited for soccer. And so I was looking at schools all across the country. I'm a homebody, so I wanted to stay close to home. My family, again, I had the younger siblings, so I didn't want to go too far. I ended up staying very close to home, but I looked at kind of the most of the Ivy League schools, and then I looked at the B, like a BC. I actually went out to Santa Clara to check that out because they were really good at soccer. So I looked at some really good soccer schools, and then I looked at sort of the academic soccer balance. And so I obviously went the balance route for me
Good for
because
you.
so I was it was it's interesting because the recruiting process happens so early, and so I'm a sophomore in high school. Like, I don't really know
Anything.
what I'm going to do in my life. All I knew is that I loved soccer and I was, I guess, good enough to get into, one of these schools at that point. Obviously you have to have the academic grades to get in. There's no like sneaking in, but it definitely, soccer definitely helped me and opened a lot of doors. I mean,
Absolutely.
I probably played soccer every single day of my life for like 18 years.
I can relate. I was playing sports through college as well, and totally get it. It was my life until
What
my
sport did you
mid
play?
20s. Football and baseball. Baseball ended up being the longest sport I played because too many injuries kept me out of football. But went through a lot of recruiting process and trying to figure out academic sport. Anyway, it's a boring, dumb story, but I talk about it on some of these podcasts because some of my guests are guys I played with or friends from college or anyway, so through Harvard, did you stop playing when college was over, or did you continue and do professional or other stuff, or did you go
No, so
right into the business world?
I stopped after Harvard, and was ready to start my career. And so I left soccer behind at that point. I'd been playing for so long. It was kind of like, okay, this is a nice little transition into, career life.
Did you play other sports growing up, or did soccer become the focus pretty early on?
Soccer was the focus early on. I always played on teams outside of school in addition to the school teams. I played, lacrosse in high school and some other
Oh, you did play other
sports, but it was
sports.
always like soccer for me.
Are you a soccer family? Did your brothers play soccer, or your parents play soccer, or did everyone do different things?
It's funny, every single one of us did a different sport. So the brother, in order, we have a lacrosse player, and then we have a tennis player, and then we have a squash player and a wrestler.
So a lot of athletes.
So crazy.
Well, look, this is another common theme that I see with highly elite successful people in any field, the people that have played college athletics, because the amount of time, what people don't understand, when you go to college and you have a certain amount of hours dedicated towards class, your four classes or whatever you have, 3 hours a day of classes, and your social stuff that you have. Well, now try to figure out you have practice every day, that's 3 hours. You have conditioning, weight room, that's an hour, running conditioning, that's an hour. You got 5, 6 hours a day, then your meals and tape work, plus physical therapy. People don't understand being a college athlete plus in college, it's like a 10, 12-hour commitment a day, every day, your whole career. So
It's a
taking
big commitment.
that, it's a huge commitment, and it's an incredible amount of mental toughness, competitiveness, beyond the physical, pounding and the, elite athleticism that you need. But it's just an incredible, incredible body of work to now move on to the business world. And it really gives you that competitive edge. So I'd love to hear a little bit about, what you think your competitive edge is, and did you get it from sports? And what's your secret sauce that you do well? Let's get into that a little bit.
I am as competitive as it gets. I just always have
Really?
been. I always have been. I don't
Shocker,
know if that was
shocker.
because of soccer or having four brothers. I don't know what it is, but it's kind of continued through to my career. I think that for me, when I commit to doing something, I want to be the best I can possibly be at it. And so that has obviously also carried over into real estate. You know, when I started 9 years ago, the big hurdle for me was this girl is, you know, client literally would be referred to as like the young girl. I was probably at this time when I started, I was the youngest one in my office of like very successful agents by years. Yes. And I think that it's kind of changed over the years. Now I feel like the offices are filled with sort of younger, or just out of college, people who see real estate and they're like, ooh, that's fun and flashy and cool and easy. And then, you know, it's interesting to see the reality check once.
Well, that is definitely the TV, you know, that is the bounce back of the real estate TV agent that created this. Oh my God, I can go make money quick, rich, and all. Now, the last 10 years since all these shows, people want to start their career in real estate because it looks so easy and so lucrative.
Yeah, totally.
But you were in before that. You were before that generation.
Yeah, way before that. I kind of, took a leap, I guess. And, you know, going back to the 80 rentals, like those first 2 to 3 years, like they don't show that grit and hustle to get to where you are. They just sort of show like the luxury space on the TV and on Instagram and all that sort of stuff. So people often forget like what it takes to actually get into the business and really build your brand, build your business.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So talk to me about some of those challenges. I imagine being a female, young, surrounded by older veteran, you know, what were some of those challenges like in those first couple of years? If you're 80
yeah,
leases.
I think
I can't even imagine.
The obvious challenges of just being a younger girl in a space that you know, has a lot of older veterans. And I think I took a new approach. So Instagram, for example, was a huge tool in me building my business and my brand and our team's brand. I remember kind of when like Instagram came out or when we started using it, I was thinking to myself, what the heck? This is like an unbelievable marketing tool. And so before any of these other agents that were in the office, even kind of around the country were on Instagram, I was like, why don't I, you know, this is how I'm going to build credibility. This is how I'm going to show people what I'm doing and show people the value I can add. And so like if I go back, sometimes I go back to like my first couple of real estate posts, it's like, you know, these small kind of like initial homes that like I was showing or rental.
What year are we talking about? Cause I know this is, I want to give people context. I know this.
Like you 2013.
Were yeah. So early adopter of Instagram. This was not early. Like today where everyone has a license on Instagram and going to the biggest houses. And this is like, nobody was on Instagram.
Right. People and I took advantage of that because I was kind of like the younger person who was tech savvy and could do this stuff. And so I started posting on Instagram. And then sure enough, like a year, 2 years later, every single real estate agent is posting on Instagram.
Right.
And so it's interesting. One of the things that I kind of focus on is like, what's the next thing? Because, and I spoke about this on the top producer panel. I think you were there in San Diego.
Yes, I was there and you spoke eloquently and it was a lot of good takeaways. But yeah, get into that a little bit.
There's no barriers to entry in the real estate space. And then on top of that, you know, everything is so transparent, or at least it feels like that. And so everybody can see what everybody else is doing. So I think being sort of the pioneer in any different space, or, you know, coming up with the next idea or the next fun, creative way to market properties is a huge way to differentiate yourself. And so, you know, I remember when like the first drone footage was happening, and I think we were one of the first, I mean, I could be wrong, but I think we were one of the first teams in Boston to be like, okay, we really need to showcase where this property is. It's on the Charles River. It's a block from Copley Square. How are we going to do that? It has an amazing roof deck. I was like, why don't we get a drone? Hire the drone company. And then like the next week, this other team bought a drone. So it's like, it, you know, everyone can kind of see what you're doing. And so I think evolving and changing and adapting to new technologies and new cool creative ideas, has, you know, helped us stay relevant and exciting, and really allows us to bring value to our clients.
Yeah. And you got to constantly evolve and reinvent yourself, even when you're an innovator, because everyone's continually to chase what you're doing. And I can totally relate to that. So what are some of the challenges now that you have this established brand and you're top of the game in Boston? Obviously, you're competitive. So no matter where you are, I can imagine you want to grow and be bigger and be better. But what are some of the core things that you know, the things that keep you up at night or stress you out, or things that are, you know, difficult now, whether it's the market, whether it's managing a team, time management, balance, work-life balance, any of that stuff. I mean, everyone has, we all deal with all of this, but what are some of the pain points?
So I will pivot, and I have an 18-month-year-old.
Is that your first kid?
What was that? Yes.
Oh, crazy. Yeah. That's amazing. Mazel tov.
So in terms of new challenges and time management, work-life balance, being a mom, but also kicking butt in the real estate space, you know, it's a fine balance, right?
Oh, yeah.
I think, like, having routines and habits and kind of sticking to those things each day is very helpful in managing time and making sure that you're not letting anything slip through the cracks. I mean, I basically feel like I took on another full-time job being
a mom,
which I absolutely love, and it's the best thing ever.
Yeah, the most important job.
Talk about what's keeping me up at night. Literally.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
The baby. Oh,
I have three. I get it. There's no more important, better, fulfilling, challenging job than being a parent.
It's fun.
So now you're in that, riding the wave and, you know, trying not to wipe out every day.
Yeah,
you got
totally
multiple chaos going on, business, baby, all of it.
Yeah. And I love working so much and I love what I do. So it's definitely a fine line of balancing how much time you're spending on one thing versus the other thing. And with real estate, you really can't turn it off. At least that's my belief. You know, I'm down here with my family now, which is amazing. We're, you know, really, I am getting to relax, and I have, you know, my partner's back at home with
benefit of having a good partner and a team.
My team, huge, huge. And so
no
I do, you know, the important stuff. I'm there, I'm on my phone, but I also get a little downtime, which is definitely important, I think.
So I think downtime is so important. It took me years, and my wife really helped with that, but being afraid to go on vacation, or going on vacation but not being able to ever, you know, compartmentalize and let go and, you know, be with my family or read a book. It's really hard in our business, and it takes years to master it. And I think I've gotten pretty good at it. Sounds like you're just starting to get better at it. You have to be when you're a parent, because you have to figure out, how do I, you know, be present and be a parent, and how do I be present in my business? So can you talk to me about what are some of your routines and what a typical day looks like for a baller mom shot caller? And I know this is new and evolving. If you're only 18-month kid, I mean, things change every day at that age. But talk to me through your typical, like, mornings with the baby, and what does it look like? I know mine was chaotic.
Yeah, it's definitely chaos, but at the same time, I knew it was important to keep some of the routines I had. So, for example, I'm up way earlier now. I was never really like an early riser. I didn't sleep in, but I know there's a lot of people who are in part of the 6 a.m. club and things like that. That was never me. Now I am part of the 6 a.m. club. So, you know, the baby's up, and the morning time is really my time of the day. It's one of my favorite times of the day. It's just, my husband leaves early for work, so it's just Xander is his name. So it's just Xander and me until I do have a nanny. So she arrives at 8. And then as soon as she arrives, I go to my workout. And so I go to Barry's boot camp. I've been going for years.
Barry's.
I love it. I'm obsessed. I go 4 or 5 days a week in the morning. Great start to my day. I get to see a ton of people I know and meet new people. And also it's just a really good workout.
Is Barry there? Because I did Barry's boot camp when he started in LA, and he'd be there and he would kill. I mean, I was a girlfriend I was dating at the time. She dragged me. It was the hardest workouts I've ever done. I was dying.
Yeah, he's not specifically here, but we have awesome teachers in Boston.
Same deal. He's got the same crazy workout.
Yeah, they're crazy workouts. They're 50. What's great is they're 50 minutes
short
in there. Honestly, it's dark and loud and you can't be on your phone. So I put my phone down, and it's like the one time of my day where I'm like, okay, I'm just focusing on this.
And then hardcore circuit training, weights, bands, running, pushups, nonstop moving.
A little bit of everything.
Yeah. I love it. So then you hit your workout.
Hit the workout. And then, you know, every day is different, right? But, you know, that morning routine gets me started. And then, you know, our team is based out of the office. So we're in the office every single day. I know a lot of teams are remote or they don't need to necessarily come into the office, but Rob, my partner, is there at like 6 a.m. every day. Both of our assistants spend the day early in the office. And so that's home base. So, you know, typically I'll do the workout, shower, get ready, go to the office. And then from there, my day, that's usually the time of the day that can go any way. So I'm either on showings, I'm doing, I don't know, transaction related things. I'm taking clients out to lunch. We do a ton of entertainment. So, you know, Rob and I are out probably 2 to 3 nights a week, taking clients to, you know, whether it's intimate dinners or, you know, a larger gathering. You know, we do, we belong to the University Club and the Quinn and the Harvard Club. So we kind of spread it out in terms of where we take clients, but it's really nice to do, you know, one-on-one, two-on-two dinners with your clients and really get to know them.
So you really take the time to invest and spend time with your clients. Sounds like a couple times a week.
Yes.
It's really high touch, you know,
super high touch,
more intimate setting. I mean, you can't get to know someone more than, you know, spending a nice hour at a meal with someone. You can get more information about each other and connect deeper than you can, you know, being just the average showing properties for 3 years. You might not get to know somebody as well as having a meal. And I fully believe in that and try to do that as much as possible. There's breakfast, lunch, dinners, drinks, you know, coffees, tea, whatever it is. I think that's so important.
Totally. And we have fun doing it too.
Yeah. And you people you like, you want to be
part of the job, but at the same time, it's enjoyable. And it's enabled me to meet so many cool people in Boston that have become friends. So,
wait, you have season ticket holder of the Red Sox?
No, I wish.
So I'll just give you my quick Red Sox story, which everybody knows if they follow me. One of my best friends growing up, who's in that picture behind me, Kevin Millar, and that next picture under him, which you can't see, is me on the field with another best friend of mine and Manny Ramirez at Yankee Stadium, because Kevin got us on the field. And at that game, it was like a pennant race in 03 when it was heating up. He took us into the clubhouse before the game and said, "Oh, I got jerseys for you." Well, they weren't jerseys. They were T-shirts. And he cut them off, made us wear cut-off Millar jerseys, and put us in the stand at Yankee Stadium so we could get just rousted.
That's
we got
funny.
Destroyed. For 3 hours, people were throwing stuff at us and destroyed. But it was fun. Anyway, I have a long
funny. Those two. So growing up, I watched, tons and tons of Red Sox games. It was like our thing in the summer. And Kevin Millar and Manny Ramirez were two of like the studs of my growing up era. So they were like the idols.
Well, there you go. So Kevin's an LA kid. I grew up with him in Little League High School. And, you know, he's the guy that we all watched. So he flew me out to all those games, you know, couple of years. I spent a ton of time in Boston. I wasn't a Boston fan before that. But then, you know, 2 seasons of him being there, I fell in love with it and I understood. I'm like, this was not like being a Dodger fan. I grew up in Dodger. This is a whole different concept.
Whole different ball game.
It's a different ball game. It's a different world, the passion. And I couldn't, even after one season, the heartbreak that I felt when Aaron Boone hit that grand slam. And Aaron Boone, Booney, God bless him, was a college buddy of mine at SC, played baseball with him at SC. But when he hit that friggin' grand slam off Wakefield, I was crying, and I was 1 year in as a Boston fan. I couldn't imagine if I was the fourth generation, you know, Boston diehard. So I have tipped my hats off to all those Boston fans, you included. But that's my little.
Do you know of Tony Conigliaro, who played for the Red Sox?
I know the name.
Back in the day,
sounds familiar.
He was the youngest guy to ever hit a home run in Fenway. My dad's cousin.
Oh, my God. So you have such a great name. You're either play for the Red Sox or you're running the Gambino family. I don't know which one, or maybe both.
Yeah, very funny.
A little both. That is incredible. So it's a family member. How old was he when he hit the home run? Like 20 or something?
Oh, I actually forget. It was somewhere around there.
Yeah, something crazy.
Sadly got hit with a – he's actually the reason I think they have like this certain part of the helmet, because he got hit in the eye.
No, that's him?
I don't know the story.
Of course I know. That's your – that's a cousin.
My dad's cousin.
Of course. Yeah. Everyone who knows baseball knows that story.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Yes. That is why they forced the helmets and all.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. It's a serious history. Wow. All right. Well, let's get into a few more personal things. Any books that you'd recommend that you've liked or podcasts that you listen to? It doesn't have to be business. Could be anything. Could be entertaining. Could be self-help. Could be business. Like, are there things that you would say, hey, these, you should check this out. This is a great book, or you should check this out.
It's funny. I don't feel like I have time to do either of those.
You
things.
May not. Then you know. Pass. I feel like say pass.
Books. I mean, Atomic Habits. I read, which I loved. So I'd say that's Atomic probably Habits. Like my favorite book in terms of even like movies, TV shows. I don't watch a ton. I
no
watch
Netflix
a lot of
for you.
A little bit as of recent, but mostly like I just grew up watching sports. And so I still would rather put a football game on than watch like a TV show. I do totally. Love good rom-com though. If we're talking movies, what did I watch last night with my mother-in-law? Some Hallmark Christmas movie was really cute. But yeah, I think I don't spend a ton of time reading and listening to, I love music. So I'd rather listen to music. But
what's on your iPhone music list if you're going to work out at your Bear? I guess at Barry's boot camp is playing it, but what do you
yeah they're some playing new- it but I would say a mix of country, love country music, so cool. You know, not so much for my workout, but you know, they
in
have
general
EDM country songs now that are more upbeat, and then I'd just say kind of like top 40 stuff. I love Taylor Swift.
Oh, I'm a Swiftie. My daughter is 9 years old and obsessed with her. And I'm like, you know what? I've been obsessed with Taylor Swift before you were born. So I'm the OG.
Yeah, she's awesome.
And then I got my boys listening to the dirtiest, raunchiest gangster rap in carpool. And we have girls in carpool, these 11, 12-year-old girls. And I'm like, oh, their parents are going to call me and I'm going to be reported. And I'm the word dad of the year, back to back. 22 and 23 and playing gangster rap. It's awful. So what is life like for a Boston sports fan post Tom Brady and Big Poppy? I mean, for a decade or more, you guys just won everything. You know, are you guys, what's going on with Boston? Are people just like freaked out? It's withdrawals from all those championships.
It's a little bit sad, I will say, and a little bit hard to watch.
Sad and hard to watch. This is after 100 years the Sox didn't win, and now it's like you don't win every year.
Huge Tom Brady fan. I watched.
How can you not be?
I still can't believe that he didn't finish his career with the Patriots. Like, that hurts. But
it does. Sports sucks. The business of sports sucks.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think it's a rebuilding era. Right now for Boston. Is that the right way to put it?
I guess so. I just got to say how much I enjoy Big Poppy, you know, his personality. I loved him, you know, spent a lot of time with him when Kevin was playing, and he was always such a warm, friendly guy. But now to see him as a TV personality, and Kevin too as a TV personality, it's like, yeah, that makes total sense. These guys were people persons, warm, always were generous with their time, down to earth, even when Poppy was at this peak stardom. He was always so down to earth. And it's great to see. It's good for baseball to have some fun personalities. Well, any other experiences you want to share? Any crazy stories that have happened in your real estate career that you're allowed to share? Any wild things?
Any
walking into stuff?
Stories?
Yeah.
Off the top of my head, no. But I have a... I think it's funny, but my business partner probably doesn't think it's funny. We were the other day, we were having dinner with a developer and we were talking about gas fireplaces. And I was at one of our new construction properties and I used the remote to turn on the fireplace and it was accidentally linked to another fireplace in another unit. And the developer happened to have gone by later that day to check on the units and he found that fireplace on. Ooh. Otherwise, it would have stayed on, you know, the whole weekend. So that night, Rob, my partner, had done a showing at another one of our listings and he woke up at 2:30 in the morning. And because of the story and we were talking about it, he was convinced that he left the gas fireplace on.
Of course.
So he drove in from the suburbs to the city at 2:30 in the morning to make sure that he turned the fireplace. It was off, but it was just kind of like a...
That is what real estate's about. For all you kids that are like wanting to come into real estate to make $5 million your first year, that kind of anxiety is really what happens.
That
is the forest burning down? Is there a flood? Oh my God. What, you know?
Yeah.
And it always happens when you're as far from the office or far from the property as possible. Or like now you're in Florida and you're like, oh my God, did I leave the key somewhere? And that's the real estate anxiety that we all live with. Well, yes. Any other words of advice or wisdom you'd give to agents that maybe either be trying to grow their business, struggling the business, trying to get in the business, just words of wisdom, things that you've learned, things that have helped you?
Yeah, I think the most important thing is, you know, real estate's a full-time career and job. It's not something you can just get into part-time, in my opinion. And I think that if you want to get to the next level, it's all about grinding it out and hustling. And, you know, you might see people in a different part of their career and their different part of their real estate career. But remember what they kind of went through at the beginning and learn from the people around you in terms of like what you can be doing to put yourself in the best position possible for success.
Well said. Very good advice.
Yeah, I think that the other thing too, when I have people come to me and ask about real estate, it's like you have to be prepared to work every single day. Weekend.
Yeah, 7 days a week.
You're not, for most of the, you know, younger people that come to me and ask, you know, what's your day like? How, you know, tell me about real estate. And the first thing I say is like, are you prepared to work weekends? Because for the first 5 to 6 years, I worked pretty much every weekend of the year and I loved it. So it didn't feel like work. But, and then the only other thing I'd say is really value the relationships you build through this business. It's not just about transactions. I mean, there's real opportunity to develop really strong relationships with really cool people in your area through the process. So it's been a fun time for me over the last 9 years building the business. I'm lucky to have a great team. And
Well, those are great pieces of advice. And I would just add on to both of those things. Like, first of all, as you know, don't look at agents that are at the top of the game and say, well, how come it looks so easy? Or, you know, they're not working on weekends or they're not working at 10 p.m. Well, you know what? Why don't you go back 10 or 20 years and look? Because obviously my work life looked a lot different 10 years ago than it looks now, 22 years later, as yours, I'm sure, does. And I'm still working, you know, still grinding. But that is so important. And I think the relationship piece is everything. Like, this is a business about relationships. It's not about transactions. Like, transactions are part of just commerce, but our business, to be good in our business, you got to cultivate, develop, and invest in people and be around people you like. And that's for the other agents too. I mean, I always tell agents, like, you're getting into this business, these agents that you're working with, you're going to be working with them for 10, 20, 30 years. That's just as important as your clients. So invest in that too.
I just had a visitor come in. Come here. You want to say
visitor,
hi?
Visitor. Let's see the come good here. Luck charm. Is this Xander?
Can you bring him over here?
The good luck charm.
The good luck charm. He'll say
bring me some of that mojo. I'll take some of that Xander mojo, the good luck charm. Some of that
hi?
Harvard swagger. Hey, Xander, what's happening?
Can you say hi? Look.
Good to see you. Your mom's a baller. True champion. Well, look, it was a total pleasure. You are a true champion and winner. And it's, it's not a surprise that you're killing it in real estate or in anything you do. But it's not easy. You probably make it look easy on the outside, but I know it can't be. And if people could only see what your college schedule must have looked like, maybe they'd have an idea of how you're able to do it now. But so good to have you. Anything else you want to say, please, now's the time. Otherwise, I'll say let's connect soon. It was awesome speaking
to you. Yeah, we'll be in touch. Thanks for having me. This was great.
Go Sox. Go Sox.
See you soon.